Welcome back to Macabre Mondays, where mystery meets the macabre with your favorite Deadly Mary duo. I'm Ale.
And I'm Tom.
Your guides through the strange, the sinister, and the spooky. Where I tell the stories and he gets dragged along for the ride. He's got to chime in. You got to chime in. So what are your couple of years?
One of my things.
One of your things. It's something that you do. Something that you do. Well, welcome back to the second part of this whole web.
If you're watching YouTube, you'll notice I'm in the same clothes, which means I convinced my wife to tell me part two in the same night.
Yes, yes, we did. It is still going to be a heavy one, okay, because it is the second parter of the first parter. Now, the last episode, we talked about Stephen Stainer, that seven-year-old boy who was abducted in Merced, California, and he was forced to live under the alias of Dennis Parnell by his kidnapper and abuser for the first 7 years of his life. He ended up escaping while saving Timothy White, who was another five-year-old boy who was kidnapped to replace Stephen. And unfortunately, Stephen passed away in 1989 from a motorcycle accident, and Timmy passed away in 2008 from a pulmonary embolism. Still very upset about this because I wish that they could have lived long and healthy lives up until they were 100 and more.
Agreed.
But almost 10 years later, after Stephen's death, this story moves somewhere completely different. This time to Yosemite. Oh, dang it.
You did it.
Yosemite. Yosemite. Guys, you know what? It's just my whole life I've always said Yosemite. And also, I don't
She also says Avril Lavigne.
Yes. Okay. Yes,
and
I do.
Berry.
Yes, I sure do. Yes, I like to say yes. Avril Lavigne.
Mm-hmm. I say my T's really pronunciated.
Why? What are your T's? What do you mean?
Whenever I say something with the T, I enunciate the T just a little harsher.
Oh my God, you do.
I had to go through speech therapy for it.
Oh, I should probably not make fun of you.
No, it's okay.
No, I'm joking. I'm joking. No, but yours is great. I don't notice it that well. Yeah, I don't notice it that well. But
because yours is the speech therapy.
Thank God. No, imagine.
Damn.
Imagine our wedding vows. You would like. Aw.
And just like a library, I will love you forever. That'd be my wife's.
I'd be like, after this, I want to go to Yosemite. He'd be like, where the fuck is Yosemite? Yosemite.
I love you.
Well, just so you know, if you haven't listened to the first part of the two-parter about Stephen Stainer, that's fine. Because you really don't need to listen to that one to listen to this one, because they are separate, but they correlate. And you'll see why I say that as I keep telling the story. But I will say, if you want the full picture, the full story, I'd highly recommend listening to the first part.
Loop it back.
Yeah, loop it back to the first episode, first part of this episode. Now that that's out of the way, let's jump into today's episode, friends.
Let's do it.
Now, remember we left off, Stephen Stainer had passed away in 1989. Yes. Okay. 10 years later, it's 1999 in Yosemite.
Good job.
I know, I did it. I was really trying so hard. And Yosemite is one of those places that almost feels bigger than real life. I was looking at photos and holy whack-a-mole, homegirl looks good, okay? I mean, I also have not been out west. I've been telling Tom. Yeah, I've been telling Tom that I want to do like a cross-country road trip and go to all the national parks. And Yosemite, I mean, dang it, Yosemite is, you know what? I'm going to just say it how I say it and I'm going to let it be. It's one of the places that it's on my list that I would love to be able to go visit. Plus, yeah. I was looking at the photos. It's gorgeous. It's got huge, like, cliffs.
I mean, we do need
waterfalls.
We love collecting stickers along our travels.
I know.
Why not, you know?
Yeah, we definitely have to. But Yosemite, it's got tons of waterfalls.
You did it again.
Damn it. I really thought I had
it. You literally even slowed down and went, Yosemite.
Yeah, because you know when you say something like your whole life and then somebody tells you like, no, that's actually not how you pronounce it. That's literally me. You're like, I can't relate really that well, but.
Oh, I know.
Anyways, so it's got deep forests, right? Roads winding through the mountains is Gorgina. And in 1999, millions of people were doing exactly that. Yosemite had more than 3 million visitors that year in 1999, okay? So this is where people go a lot. This was one of the most famous national parks in the country. I think it is. I don't know if it still is to this day, but at least at the time it was. So this was not some forgotten little, you know, campground in the middle of nowhere, right? But the story we're talking about does not begin deep inside the wilderness just yet. It begins near the park in a small community called El Portal.
Okay.
El Portal sits along Highway 140, west of Yosemite Valley. It's one of the routes people use to get into the park, and it's only about a 30-minute drive into Yosemite Valley. Jesus. It sounds like I'm having a stroke.
You can do it.
So if you were visiting the park, staying near El Portal would make sense, right? And that's where Cedar Lodge comes in, because Cedar Lodge was a hotel property in El Portal outside the official boundaries of Yosemite National Park.
Dude, now, this, I'm just going to say it right now, guys. This little motel or the market. Oh, that's just the market.
That's El Portal. No, so this is the location. This is the region, El Portal.
Yeah. Okay, well, the
Cedar Lodge is in the next photo.
Remind me so much. I can't remember the movie, but it was a scary movie. I think it came out a year, maybe 2 years ago, of the girl that got stuck in that building during the ice storm.
No, I don't think I've seen that.
You literally watched it with me. It was, I think, a girl and her sister, and they got stuck in this building, and then they ended up escaping out of the, like, the latch, and there was a guy that, like, kept trying to kill different people and then held a bunch of them hostage.
No. Wrong girl, Tom. No, I'm joking. No, I swear, I don't remember this.
Scary movie, girl stuck in building.
This is life.
Snowstorm.
Hold on tight. Are you talking about Day After Tomorrow?
No. No Exit.
No Exit? I've never heard of that. I've never heard of that movie.
We watched it.
Let me see.
Well, it came out in 2022, so we were together. No,
yeah, but
look
that
at this.
Mean that
now
we were
you remember
watching?
This? It was the Visitor Center.
Yes. Wow, that was like one of the first movies we've ever watched together.
Yes.
Like probably the first few
and
months
I
of
thought
us
it
being
was
together.
So good. Oh, that's it was what really it was. Good. She found out that the girl was kidnapped in the van.
Yes.
And those two. Yes.
Yes. And the
now
two people that
sense.
Were playing off as if they. Yes. Oh, yes.
Yes,
I remember. Wow.
Such a good film.
Way to recollect a memory because that was so long ago.
But needless to say,
yeah,
it does.
Yeah.
Dude,
it kind
of
looks like it's giving that vibe.
Not give that.
Yeah, it's giving that. It's giving that. Yeah, and so El Portal is like, what is it? It's just like one of the towns there, okay?
Okay.
And that's where Cedar Lodge is. It's a hotel property in El Portal, and it's just outside the official boundaries of the national park. So in February 1999, three women checked into Cedar Lodge. A mother, Carol Sund, her daughter, Julie Sund, and their family friend, Silvina Pelozo. Carol Sund was 42 years old, Julie was 15, and Silvina was 16. Now, Silvina was from Argentina. Love Argentina, one of the best countries.
Vamos, vamos.
Vamos, vamos. And was visiting the United States as an exchange student. So this trip was supposed to be something special and fun. Okay, Carol, Julie, and Silvina were traveling near Yosemite, staying at Cedar Lodge and El Portal, and spending time in one of the most beautiful places in the country. Now, Carol is energetic. She's deeply connected to her family. She's also very involved in child advocacy work that I was seeing, including work as a court-appointed special advocate for abused and neglected children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love that because we need people like this. Julie was a teenager full of life ahead of her. She was very thoughtful, athletic, and full of plans. And Silvina was outdoorsy, smart, and adventurous. She had convinced her parents to let her travel to the U.S., to the United States. And by all accounts, she was excited for the experience. But then, somewhere between the trip they planned and the trip their families expected them to return home from, something went very wrong. Carol's husband expected to hear from them, but he didn't. They also missed their checkout and even their flight home. And when he could not reach them, he reported them missing. Now, at first, investigators had to consider the possibilities, right? Maybe they changed plans or they got lost, or even worse, there could have been an accident at the park. That's something very common, right? There's not, you don't really have signal out there.
Wildlife, bears,
wildlife,
everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing, too, that I was saying. It's not unheard of. You know, people hike and drive to the mountain roads. You know, plans change and all that. So it's not something, like, out of the ordinary.
Yeah.
So in the beginning, there was still room for a normal explanation. But that window started closing fast because three people were missing. Like, we're talking about three people are missing. And their rental car was also gone. Their families had not heard from them. And no one had a clear answer for where they went after checking into Cedar Lodge. So as days past, the case grew bigger and searches started. Law enforcement got involved, which meant that the media picked it up. And what began as a missing persons case near Yosemite started to feel like something much worse. Mm-hmm. Weeks passed, and they were still missing until of March 1999, the case took a turn. Trigger warning. On March 18th, investigators found their rental car in the woods. It was a red Pontiac, and it had been burned. You can keep going.
Okay. Oh, shit.
Yes. So you see the car there? It's been torched.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, literally torched to flames. Now, that changed everything because now this was not just about just the three women who may have gotten lost or changed plans. This looks like someone intentionally did this.
Covering this car, trying to hide some...
Yeah, this looks like it intentionally was set on fire. Also, how is it that this car, their rental car, ends up in the middle of the woods like this?
Yeah.
Right?
And obviously far enough away that nobody noticed the flames or anything.
Exactly. That's my other thing, too. That's a good point because if you're going to... torch a car, isn't it going to explode?
Either way,
there's going to be flames.
Yes,
there's going to be a lot of
black
smoke.
But the other thing, even outside of that, I'm thinking during the day, if you torch it, then it's very likely that somebody's going to see the smoke in the air.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
But if you do it at night, then somebody's going to have to see the glow. So it's like there's...
But would you maybe...
You would have had to have done it... an area that either the smoke wasn't going to be visible if it was done during the day, or if you did it at night, you had to have done it in an area that the glow wasn't going to be noticed by anyone.
That's a good point. Would you, if you were a hiker and you saw a glow that big, would you just think someone's doing a fire though?
No, I don't think so. Especially because a car is going to be big and it's
going to make noise.
It's also, I was going to say, it's going to be probably making a lot of popping and loud noises. And
so that's a good point.
I'm going to think it could be a forest fire. So I'm going to probably be either, if I'm a routine hiker,
right?
I'm more than likely traveling with some type of satellite device, like phone or.
Yeah, you're probably going to know what to do if you do see a wildfire.
Or some type of like walkie that I can at least get in contact with like park rangers or something.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I'd be reaching out saying like, I think there's a wildfire over here.
Interesting. And now that's giving me another, which I didn't even think of it this way, but clearly whoever put this here or did this knows the woods, Yosemite
1,000%.
Yeah, because you're putting all that in perspective, and that's true, because how would anybody not have called that in? And it's been weeks later, they just found the car, like weeks later. So the next day, on March 19th, so the day after they found the car, investigators found two bodies inside the trunk of the burned car.
Damn.
Yes, and it was later confirmed as Carol Sund and Silvina Peloso.
Okay.
But Julie was not with them. So now investigators had this new question. Where is Julie, right? She was only 15 years old, and she was the only one that's now still missing. And we find mom and her friend in the rental car trunk.
And I'm just saying it's very unlikely that it'd be something Julie would do, because I feel like same thing. If it was something that she would have done, then I think
that would have probably come there.
Up. Yeah.
Yeah, they're also not from there. They're here visiting. So why would... Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. Exactly. But then, days later, on March 24th, the FBI receives a map.
What?
The map led investigators to Julie's body, which was near Don Pedro Reservoir, as you can see. And I'll post the maps on socials and stuff, and I'll put it in the video. On the map, for everyone that's listening, it's pretty much like lined college ruled paper. And it's basic line drawing of like a pond, like a circle. And it just has written Don Pedro with water waves on it. And then there's like the straight line, which I think it says 126 or 120, whichever. It's the highway. It's like the route by there. And on the top of the letter, it says, whoever they wrote, we had fun with this one.
What the hell? This is so eerie.
Yes.
What the...
I know. And with that, this missing persons case originally is now a triple murder investigation. And so whoever had done this had not only killed them, but had moved evidence, burned the rental car, and then sent investigators directions to Julie's body. Interesting, right? Uh-huh. I feel like last time I heard of a case like this, I'm sure there's plenty, but I always think of the Zodiac.
I was going to say the
always
same
think
thing.
Of the Zodiac, yeah. Because to me, it's
unfortunately, he literally has never gotten caught, but
yeah,
he truly at that time knew or felt extremely invincible.
He did, yeah.
And was taunting the police. And I feel like when you see notes like this, that's exactly what this is.
Yeah, it's giving like, we're looking for a psychopath.
Yeah.
Yeah, like it's giving, it's really giving that.
Like he is, whoever this is, it is as if he is having fun toying.
Toying with
the
police
and the media, knowing that this is all going to go live. This is all going to go on air. And
it's a good point.
He's getting excitement out of it.
Yeah, it's like even, he's getting attention.
Yeah, on the fire department side, we used to have this. Unfortunately, that's a type of arson. There's arsonists that'll set fires.
Oh, yeah.
Because they either want to see the action.
Right.
Or they want to try to be the hero.
I've seen that. And which is crazy because that's just so sad. Like, you literally are causing such a misfortune.
Yeah.
And it's
and
like,
in this, it really is coming off like he is just enjoying watching the action play before
his
eyes.
Right, like, it's like, let's see what happens. Yeah, or her. Yeah, exactly. But even with all this, okay, they still did not know who it was. They knew for sure that by late March of 1999, they were not dealing with an accident. Like, this is clearly somebody that's doing something on purpose. Yes. Even though they have all this evidence, they still couldn't find who the person responsible was. So the case got national attention, which means that the FBI ended up getting involved, and the families were desperate for answers. But weeks, unfortunately, turned into months, and still no arrest. They were investigating different people and interviewing them. They were interviewing people at the lodge, too, because that's where they were staying. That's the last time they were seen. And they were trying to follow leads, but nothing.
Yeah, because, again, I'm also like, they went out, as you said a few times, they're not from here.
Right.
They don't know anybody. So either it's just unfortunate bad luck and they got chosen.
Right.
Or somebody targeted them, but why?
But why, exactly. One of the other things that I was reading, too, is that, but I'm not sure if it's true or not, but one of the things that I read was that originally Carol, Julie, and Sylvina, they were going to a university for Julie to go, like, check out. What is it called when you go to the campus, you check it out?
Oh, like a university tour.
Yeah, like a university tour nearby. I don't know how nearby. Could be an hour or whatever. But they decided to make a stop in Yosemite.
Okay.
And do, like, a trip and do all of that together.
Damn, dude, that's honestly...
I know, that's hell of a trip. That's so
that's
cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think that's so cool.
We went to a pizza place on one of my college visits.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, that's it. Oh.
I mean,
imagine
it was
if
cool.
You went to Yosemite.
It was cool, Mom and Dad. It was cool. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, because they're going to listen to the episode and they're going to be like, wow. Wow. Okay. So for months, the case unfortunately stalls. And then the summer comes. It's now July of 1999. Another woman disappears. But this time, not near Yosemite. This time, it's inside
Yosemite. Okay.
Her name was Joey Armstrong. Joey was 26 years old, and she worked as a naturalist with the Yosemite Institute.
I was just going to say, I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, you're fine.
She literally, if you guys just listen to audio and you never check out the photos, highly recommend checking out the photos.
Yes, I do too.
But to paint you a picture, she literally looks like the typical girl that is in those like cozy Hallmark movies that works at the coffee shop.
Yes.
Or exactly the job she has.
That she has.
Working at like a national park or doing something with nature.
Yeah, it's so funny because she loves, I love that you said that because she loved nature and teaching so much that she actually worked for the Yosemite Institute teaching elementary school.
To teach kids
about the national park and connecting them with outdoors.
Teaching them about Yosemite.
Like, and she just has that like energy to her, just even in the photos. It just feels so
really
grounded
and
like, yeah, it's just something about her. And she's so cute. I just can't. But she lived in the Forresta area, which is inside Yosemite National Park in a nearby remote cabin with her boyfriend and a friend. I also read that the cabin had no electricity and they would actually have to get fresh water from a nearby stream. So that's like how remote she was living.
Yeah, honestly.
But it sounds so peaceful.
I feel like I could do that for like a few months.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
Right.
Then I'd be like, got my fix in.
Yeah,
I'm done.
I think I'm good. I think I'm going to go back home.
Give me electric and Wi-Fi and plumbing.
And it's funny because from what people were saying about her that I read, Joey was exactly the kind of person you would imagine thriving in a place like Yosemite.
Mm-hmm.
And she looks like it. She really does. It's like I told you, she was there teaching too. She pretty much had dedicated her life doing this. She was even planning to go to Costa Rica the next year to learn Spanish, which I'm like,
oh, that is awesome.
I know. I think I'm like, dude, what a beautiful life. Seriously. I was even reading that she had taken up rock climbing and she actually climbed Yosemite's El Capitan face.
Oh.
It's like 900 feet.
That's the one that the Netflix did the Free Solo.
Yeah,
guy
I actually added a photo of him at the
doing it.
Yeah, like you can see it.
Yep.
Yeah, that's him. I was like, yeah, that Free Solo guy, Alex, also climbed it. Yeah, because I was like, oh, I remember this. I remember this. And I think this is kind of like, which, you know, I find it so funny because when you look at El Capitan and you see like the Yosemite's face, I think it's like one of the first ones you would do as a beginner. I think I forgot.
Get the
I could be wrong. Actually, let me look it up. Let me look it up.
I'm sorry, guys. For those of you that don't know, I was an avid rock climber as a Boy Scout. Climbed some of the toughest climbs that you could climb. Even maxed out one of the climbs at one of the camps that I actually worked at years ago. And I'm sorry, but if any okay, I was getting ready to say, if any face of this mountain is a beginner,
that'd be crazy.
That would be absolutely insane.
Wait, now I'm like, what's a beginner? So she actually climbed. Well, I was trying to figure out to see what's the beginner. If there are any avid hikers or if you somehow know this information, now I need to know. What is the beginner rock climber? Yeah. What is the beginning climb that you would that they would recommend you doing if you're getting into that sport? Because now I'm curious.
I mean, something like this. This you're going to need to understand how to boulder, which bouldering is like where you're literally just using a lot more muscle.
The grip and everything is insane. Yeah.
And then you're also going to have to practice a lot of very difficult, there's probably technical terms. I was never that kind of rock climber, but you have to practice getting your foot in different positions.
Yeah, no, you do.
And that's where going to like rock climbing facilities, you can actually practice. They'll mark, if you ever go to a rock climbing facility and you see the little tape on underneath the rocks, those are actual paths.
Oh.
And each path is a different difficulty.
Right.
So if you don't rock climb and you go, you're like, oh, look at all the rocks I can use. But if you're an actual rock climber, you're going to go and you look and you see at the very bottom, they'll have it labeled with the difficulty.
Oh, interesting.
And it's not
that's
like
cool.
Easy, medium, hard.
Yeah.
It's actual
like its
numbers and then letters with the numbers.
Wow. Okay. That's cool. That's interesting. That's good to know. Well, she climbed up 900 feet of it, which I'm like, girl,
damn.
I wouldn't even be able to do 2 feet. I can't even jump.
That's insane.
I can't even jump without getting scared.
It's true.
Time I try to do the heel click thing, I get so nervous. I get so nervous. I have to hold on to Tom's shoulders and do it.
It's funny.
Okay, here I'm going to have to place a trigger warning. On July 21st of 1999, Joey was supposed to bring some equipment to a coworker's house. She called around 6:30 that evening to let them know that she was on her way. But she never arrived. The next day, on July 22nd, rangers found Joey's body in a creek near her cabin. And what they found made it clear that this was not an accident. Joey was actually murdered, and she was decapitated.
What the fuck?
I know. So now investigators had another young woman dead, murdered, in the Yosemite area. And unlike the murders of Carol, Julie, and Sylvina, this time there were fresh clues. Because remember the last time when they were trying to figure out who did this to Carol, Julie,
they
and Sylvina,
no
there was
leads.
No clues. So it seems like whoever did this also cleaned up their evidence.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, probably why they burned the car.
Exactly. Very true. Yes. A witness had actually seen a very distinct vehicle. Okay, you can go forward. A blue and white International Scout, which is a car, and it was seen near Foresta that evening. Now, I've never seen a car like this, but this clearly looks very distinct.
So, fun fact, and my dad's going to remember, he has a toy version of this.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah.
Wow. I feel like I've never seen this type of car. Like, even when I saw the photo, I'm like, one, the color, you can already stand out. Like, even there's other, because it's a light, it's light blue, guys. Like, and it's got like a white stripe on the side.
You just describing that, I can guarantee my dad's like, oh, I still have that in a box in the garage.
Oh my God, Dill, if you're listening to this, send me the photo. That's how I'll know you listen to the episode. Even though he calls me every time or like texts me like, great job. A witness had seen this blue and white International Scout near Foresta that evening, and a ranger had also come across a man with that same kind of car after he claimed he was having car troubles on the side of the road. So now we've got some clues here, okay? Mm-hmm. And this car really matters, not only because, I mean, it's a clue, but it's so specific.
It's very
such a specific car that doesn't really, you will, this type of car wouldn't really blend well with others in the parking lot.
Not
like you
at
wouldn't
all.
Be like, "Where's my car?" No. It's like, that's your car. And that specific lead would finally point them towards a name.
Mm-hmm.
And that name was, you can keep going forward, was Carrie Stainer.
What?
Steven Stainer's older brother.
What?
Carrie was 37 years old in 1999, and he worked as a handyman at Cedar Lodge, the same place where Julie, Carol, and Sylvina so happened to have stayed before they disappeared.
I'm going to just say it one more time. What?
I know.
Carrie
Stainer.
Okay.
Carrie Stainer.
What?
The older brother.
Okay.
You can keep
looking. I'm very caught off guard.
You're going to see some photos with him. Carrie was 30.
I noticed that before you even zoomed in.
Really? Okay, you noticed. So there's this famous photo of Steven Stainer being photographed in the crowd while he's coming home. You can see his dad. And you can vaguely see Carrie in the background, not looking like crazy excited, but it just looks creepy. It kind of looks creepy. He looks a little bit like he's in the back. He's not very upfront with his brother, okay? Now, after Joey Armstrong's murder, investigators were looking at him again. Why am I saying again? Why are they looking at Carrie Stainer again?
Wait, hold on. Wait, what?
I know you. Yes, they looked at him again because Carrie had actually been interviewed before back in March 3rd.
For what?
He was interviewed on March 3rd after the disappearances of Julie, Carol, and Sylvina.
Get the fuck out.
The FBI actually spoke with him at Cedar Lodge because at that point, they were speaking to everybody that worked at Cedar Lodge.
Okay, makes sense. Makes sense.
Everybody.
You know what? I'm just innocent until proven guilty. I'm not jumping to conclusions right now, but.
You're there. You're like, the conclusion's been made. Yeah.
Everybody listening, conclusions been made. They're already on the same page. We're all on. We're here together.
Well, at that point when they interviewed him, he denied seeing the women and they didn't really have enough to treat him as a main suspect. So they were interviewing everybody at the lodge and he didn't really seem to stand out at the time. So he was let go. And then months later, July happened with Joey.
Wait, hold on. Time out.
Yeah.
He couldn't have done this alone. Maybe he did. And maybe to throw them off their scent, because the one letter said we really had fun with this one.
Okay.
There's a we.
Interesting. Okay. So Joey was murdered inside Yosemite. And this time, investigators had a much stronger lead, right? The car. The car.
Okay.
Connected to Carrie. Okay, that's our lead. After Joey's body was found on July 22nd, a National Park Service special agent interviewed him. And during the interview, Carrie admitted and agreed that the vehicle he did have is very distinctive. It's very unique. He agrees. He's like, yeah, it is unique. He even said that he believed that he was most likely the only person in Yosemite area driving one like it. Yeah, I agree.
I don't like this guy's confidence.
But he denied being in Foresta that night, the night that Joey disappeared. And again, he was not arrested right then because they had to let him go. They didn't. All they had is that his car was around there.
I get it.
But after that interview, his behavior changed. A co-worker later said Carrie sold a VCR and television for a very low price. His supervisor said that Carrie skipped work on July 23rd and never came back. And he also closed his credit card union account that same day. Interesting.
That's all really weird.
Really weird.
Do you care about your credit if you're going to like take off?
You know?
Just asking.
Tom's like, I'm on to you,
like
motherfucker.
In my opinion.
And I don't like it.
No, I'm sorry. If I'm going on the run and whatnot.
Can't you cash out, though?
Well, But it's a credit. Oh, you said credit union.
Yeah, credit union account.
Sorry, I was thinking it was a credit card. And I'm like, dude, fuck paying that off. Like, if you're going on the run, why are you paying these guys back?
Imagine he's like, dude, I can't go on the run unless I pay this off. Like, it's only fair. It's only right.
The one part of him actually having like, what is it called?
Oh, what is it? Some type of empathy.
Integrity.
Oh, integrity.
The one
part of
his integrity is like, I can't. I got to pay my
like,
credit
card
off.
Yeah, like, I don't want,
I can't
credit,
go to jail with bad credit.
My credit score is going to be so bad. Wait, now you got me thinking. What does happen to people that go to prison and their credit?
I have no idea.
Does your credit get affected because you go to jail? I would assume you get
this
flagged.
Is my wife. She's a Y person.
I would assume you get flagged. Okay.
I have no idea.
All right, back to the story. Okay, so he closes his account.
Credit union account.
Yes.
He takes all of his cash.
So now this doesn't seem like it's just a guy with a specific type of vehicle. Now it's looking like
he's running.
He's trying to run and disappear. So investigators put a lookout notice on him. And on July 24th of 1999, it was a sunny day in Laguna del Sol near Wilton, California. It was a clothing optional resort. So it's a nudist resort. Yes. They refer to it a lot in the news and the articles that I was reading as a nudist colony. And I was like, oh, I like that. Okay. You can keep going. A woman at Laguna del Sol recognized Carrie from television coverage and called the FBI.
Oh my God. Sorry.
I know I had to put some photos.
I'm getting caught off guard by some of these photos.
If you guys look up Luna del Sol in Wilton, California, there are photos of the nudist the nudist colony.
I'm comfortable with my body.
But they're
body.
Having a great time.
Like, y'all, I'm comfortable with my body. I'm not that comfortable, though, to where I'm going to be walking around with, like, nothing on.
I will say.
Just having casual conversations.
I will say, I've been to a nude beach before, and I was, like, fully nude. I will say there is something freeing about it. So I kind of see why they all look so happy in this colony. Because when I did go to the nude beach, at first I was like, oh, this is awkward. Like, everybody's naked, and you're looking at me, and you, I don't know if you're looking at me because you got sunglasses on, and you don't know if I'm looking at you because I got sunglasses on. It was, like, a whole thing. But I do remember I was like, wow, actually, like, it's so nice not having to worry about tan lines. Like, it's very freeing. And then also getting in the only thing I didn't get in the water because I was like, great.
My love, you've never gotten in the water. You don't like getting in
it's
the water.
It's true.
You've gotten a lot better.
I've gotten a lot better. But I kept thinking at that time, I'm like, dude, if I get in the water, what if there like a crab clips my cooter or something? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like,
I mean, it's a valid concern, but
it is
what the hell?
And up in Jersey, because that's where I went to one. Up in Jersey, there's horseshoe
crab.
There's
a nude beach up in Jersey?
Yeah, there is. It's like further. I forgot exactly where, but it's like further in. So then like, and there's a sign like way out when.
In the words of Hamilton, everything's legal in Jersey.
In Jersey. But I was going to say, in Jersey, they have horseshoe crabs where they're the ugliest, most disgusting things I've ever seen on this planet Earth. That's also another reason why I don't like the ocean. Is they have them, and I'm always like, oh my God, imagine a horseshoe crab is like, oh, I just can't, like hanging out with me in the ocean. Anyways,
Carrie's
okay.
at this place.
All right, so the woman at Laguna del Sol recognized Carrie from the TV coverage, and she calls the FBI. When the agents arrive, they find Carrie in the resort restaurant. Thankfully, he's clothed. Okay, he's clothed. At first, he said he would rather not talk, but once they got to Sacramento, Carrie waived his Miranda rights and agreed to be interviewed.
Okay. Innocent or not, you never waive
your
Miranda
rights.
Mm-hmm. If you guys are going to take anything from our episodes, if you are ever arrested, you
even
never
if you're innocent,
waive your Miranda rights.
You call a lawyer. You want to speak to a representative
you
lawyer.
Lawyer up again, even if you are 120,000% innocent,
yes.
You call a lawyer.
Yes, and they'll be like, "Well, that doesn't seem like an innocent thing to do." That's what they want you to think. Okay, that's what they want you to think. So he waives his Miranda rights, and he starts confessing. He admits that he did kill Joey Armstrong.
What the fuck?
Yes, and he also confesses to the murders of Carol, Julie, and Sylvina.
Why is he just confessing?
According to the court record, Carrie said that Julie, Carol, and Sylvina checked into room 509 at Cedar Lodge on February 14th of 1999. He worked there, and he also lived on the property, so he was like a maintenance worker. He had seen that there was no adult men with them. Carrie said that he put together what was basically a crime kit, duct tape, rope, a knife, gloves, and okay. I think there was a gun.
What the hell?
Yes. Then he used the excuse of, oh, maintenance at the door, need to check something out, to get into their room. And once he was inside, that's where he bound all three of them. He killed Carol and Sylvina. Then he took Julie while she was still alive, and he killed her elsewhere. Later, he put Carol and Sylvina into the truck of the rental car and burned it. That's when he mailed the map that led the investigators to Julie's body near Don Pedro Reservoir. Now that he confessed, and the reason why he said he mailed that letter, it's because he said, well, you guys haven't found Julie, and I kind of felt bad that her body was out there waiting.
I'm sorry. I am... What the hell just happened?
So now that he confessed, right? It's great. He confessed, but the investigators still need proof. They just have his confession, okay? So the next day, Carrie's like, you know what? I can show you guys proof. Let me take you guys out to the locations that I committed these crimes. And he would point out to where all that evidence was. Now, investigators were able to recover items that backed up parts of his confession. There were items and evidence included that connected to Carol, Julie, Sylvina, and there was also evidence connected to Joey. In Joey's case, investigators found a lot of physical items, like the duct tape that matched the scene. Apparently, there was like a torn sunflower seed packaged, and it matched the plastic that was found there. Okay. His sandals matched the shoe prints by her house, because he showed up to her house, to the cabin, and he saw her coming in and out because she was getting some stuff ready for her coworker. So she was in and out of the cabin moving things to her car. And when he saw that she was alone, that's when he came with his car. There's also tire tracks that match his specific wheels, his specific sandals. And he ended up pretty much pulling a gun out on her, moving her through the cabin, taking her to the back of the creek. And that's where he decapitated her. Yes.
Why?
And he said that she was... That's the other thing that killed me. He said that she fought really hard. And I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you, dude?
What is going... Like, what?
Yes.
What in the actual hell just fucking happened? Like...
Yeah, how do we get there? How do we get here?
Yes.
Yeah.
How do you go from being the brother of a kid that was abducted... Tortured for 7 fucking years, abused.
Right. He's a survivor. He's a hero. Yeah.
And then you become damn near just as fucking bad. Like,
as his abductor.
Yeah, as his abductor. Yeah.
Like, it's almost like what? He wanted attention.
Yes.
Remember how you said about the map? You're like, it sounds like this guy wants attention.
Yeah.
Almost like he wanted attention.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, there's another detail from the confession that I wanted to mention. I feel like it's worth mentioning because I read in this article, the CBS Sacramento article by reporter Curtis Ming, that the former FBI agent, Jeff Rennick, talked about the time that he spent with Carrie before and during the interview. So he was one of the FBI agents that had to go out and pick them up from the resort and then brought him back. And according to Rennick, he and another agent convinced Carrie to ride with them to the FBI office. And during that car ride with Carrie, he said that the conversation became surprisingly casual. Now, he described it as just two men who did not know each other. He doesn't know him. Carrie doesn't know Jeff. And they're just pretty much stuck in a situation that neither of them really wanted to be in. So they're just talking on their way back to the FBI, to the FBI headquarters. And one of the things that they talked about was Stephen Stainer's kidnapping, his brother's kidnapping. And Jeff, the agent, said that Carrie brought up how Kenneth, who kidnapped Stephen, had served only about 5 years, and that Carrie felt like it wasn't right. It didn't sit right with him. He was very upset to know that, like, he only got 5 years.
Yeah.
Nothing else came of it. And Jeff, he agreed with him. When the reporter asked Jeff Rennick if he gained Carrie's trust, he said yes, but he also made it clear that he was not trying to manipulate him in some dramatic movie interrogation way. He said that they were just talking and Carrie just started to feel comfortable, and that's when he was opening up.
Okay.
Yes. But then, before Carrie admitted to killing Carol, Julie, Joey and Sylvina, Rennick said that Carrie tried to negotiate. He had three requests. His three requests were, one, he wanted images of young girls.
What the fuck?
Two, he wanted his family to receive the reward money because he came up and admitted confessed to what happened. And three, he wanted to be sent to a federal prison near his family. Now, I remember there was also another article I read that he also said, I'll talk if you make my story into a movie, too.
Damn. So he, I mean, he just disturbed.
Disturbed. Exactly. Yeah. Now, Jeff Rennick told him, out of those three requests, pick one, right? You want photos of a young girl, you want the reward money for your family, and you want to be closer to your family if you go to, when you go to prison, right? And what did he choose? He chose the images.
What the actual fuck?
I know. Not the money for his family, not to be close to his family. He chose the images. Yeah. I'm telling you, disturbed. There's something, yeah, disturbed. And that detail is like, it's just so horrifying because it just says a lot about where Carrie's priorities were in that moment. He didn't get any of those requests. None of them, obviously. But he did confess. He admitted to killing all of them. And according to Jeff, Carrie said that he planned the attacks for more than a year.
Are you fucking kidding
yes
me?
Yes. Jeff also said that Carrie explained why he sent the map. Like I said earlier, it's because he felt bad. It was bothering him that Julie's body was still out there and nobody had found her yet. So I'm like, where? Like, it's just interesting. What the hell? Like, you murder them, but then you feel bad for them, but then you... It's so weird. I don't understand that. Like, that is just so beyond my comprehension, I guess. I just... That's... I don't get it. Clearly, this just shows how complicated and disturbing he is. Clearly. Because I find it also interesting that he's talking about his brother with Jeff.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I don't like that that happened to him. And
he should have gotten, like, more time.
He should have gotten more time. And it's like, my brother really, you know, hurt me. But then
you literally ask for images of young girls.
Yeah, it's so...
You disgusting piece of shit.
Yeah, it's like, it's super predatory. I can't. Well, after Carrie had confessed, the court side of the case actually split into two parts, I saw, because he couldn't be tried for all the murders in one trial because Carol, Julie, and Sylvina were killed after staying at the lodge, or they were pretty much killed outside of the official boundaries of the national park. So part of the case was handled by the California State Court, and Joey Armstrong, since she was murdered inside Yosemite, that made her case federal. Mm-hmm. So now he's got two trials here. He's got a state trial and a federal trial. Okay. Now, in September of 2000, Carrie pleaded guilty in federal court to killing Joey. That plea deal spared him from a possible death sentence, but he was sentenced to life to prison without release. So regardless, he seemed like he took the plea deal of the death sentence.
Yeah.
So he's not making it out. It doesn't matter. But then came the state case for Carol, Julie, and Sylvina, and that trial was eventually moved to Santa Clara County because the case had gotten so much attention near Yosemite and the Sierra foothills. And on August 27th, 2002, a jury convicted Carrie of three first-degree murders, kidnapping, and special circumstances. I don't know exactly what the special circumstances were, but that's what I saw. But even after the guilty verdict, the jury still had to decide whether Carrie was legally sane at the time of the murders. I know. The minute I read that, I was like, tell me he's not saying, like, don't do this to me, because I cannot. Like, did he legally understand what he was doing? I obviously feel like he had to have, right? Yes. Now, his defense, obviously, they're doing their job as their lawyers. They argued that Carrie had serious mental health issues. He did. He had violent fantasies. He had intrusive thoughts and a disturbing history. And that's why he was so out of control. Okay. But the prosecution kept pointing out how planned the crimes were, because remember, he prepares these supplies.
He thought through all of this.
Yeah. He chose the victim. He saw a victim. He's like, that's not intrusive thoughts.
That's you literally planned everything.
Like, you had choice points to stop, and you decided to keep going through with them. And that's the thing too. He also used that excuse of maintenance is here. I need to come in.
Yeah.
No, you didn't. That's also another reason, right? He also cleaned up the evidence. So,
oh,
like,
my God. And sent a no, everything.
Yeah,
like,
torched the rental car.
What the fuck?
I know. No, seriously. No joke. I was like, what? Okay. Well, the prosecution's argument was basically, this was clearly organized. Carrie knew it was wrong. He knew what he was doing. And thankfully, the jury also agreed and found him sane to stand trial.
Thank the fucking Lord.
Yes. Then in October of 2002, the jury recommended the death penalty. And in December of 2002, the judge sentenced Carrie Stainer to death for the murders of Carol, Julie, and Sylvina. So by the end of 2002, Carrie had received life without release in the federal case for Joey Armstrong, mm-hmm. and a death sentence in the state case for Carol, Julie, and Sylvina.
So he's going to be put to death.
He's going to be put to death. So he's never really going to see the light of day. But what I do want to mention here, which that's another thing too. So like right now, he's still in prison, obviously. Mm-hmm. But from what I saw is that like the most recent thing about him is that he was actually trying to appeal his state conviction and the death sentence. So he was trying to appeal that, so he didn't go to the death sentence. But in 2019, California Governor Gavin Newsom placed a delay on executions. So it doesn't erase his death penalty or take it away, but it just pauses the process because from what I was seeing, the state of California isn't acting on them right now. I don't know what the law is going on there, but that's just what I read.
I think there's a lot of states in the U.S. that have either done away with death penalties.
Yeah, like there's something there. Right. So, but he's still in prison and that's where he's going to stay. The most recent update happened in 2026, actually, like a couple months ago. He had his death penalty appeal denied by the California Supreme Court. And as of July of 2026, he is still listed as in California's official condemned persons list, which I didn't know that's their death row list. Wow. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's in prison at the San Quentin State Prison in California. But what I do want to talk about here is Carrie's background, because a lot of your questions, mine were too, why?
Yeah.
What
why?
Happened?
Literally. Like,
how did we go from there?
Some stuff's making sense.
Yeah.
The tension. But then
he's disturbed.
The disturbed request for images and just get into it.
Yeah. So one of the things I wanted to talk about is Carrie's background, because a lot of stuff also came out during the trial about his childhood, family life, mental health were a major part of the defense, their strategy, right? I mean, he has a lawyer. They're going to do that. So the defense ended up pointing a... The defense ended up painting a much darker picture of what was happening behind the scenes, because obviously that's their job. So everyone came to learn that he has he's got several issues. But one of the issues is that he has compulsive hair pulling.
Okay.
He gets headaches. He was growing more agitated as he got older. Carrie grew up in Merced County with his parents, right? Kay and Delbert. Kay was mom, Delbert was dad, and his younger brother, Stephen, and three sisters. Yeah. Now, before the murders, people who knew Carrie did not describe him as like an obvious threat. Friends, classmates, teachers, like anybody who really knew him, literally just described him as a quiet, shy, polite, very respectful. And also he was creative. He was a creative person.
Okay.
He was artistic. In high school, he was voted most creative, and he worked as a cartoonist for the school paper I read. So from the outside, it sounds like
he looks just basically normal, just maybe a little socially awkward.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that guy's dangerous, right? Exactly. But I was reading that growing up, he was just very odd. Growing up, he would try to make like sexual passes towards girls, and it was never met with the same interest. So like he could never really... have a girlfriend. And as he got older, he liked going to the woods in the national park to smoke weed and be naked and dance. So it was like something he liked to do.
Okay.
Yes. Which
very
I'm also like,
interesting.
Imagine I'm fucking hiking Yosemite and I'm like,
Yosemite. And,
yeah. Yosemite.
And you see
somebody smoking weed naked.
I mean,
dancing.
Don't get me wrong. Part of me would be like, yeah, go hippie.
Yeah. Right. But this ain't the 70s
anymore.
But
at the same time, I'd be like, what the fuck is
I'd be like, what's going on?
I'd look at you and be like, when you get the back to the car.
Yeah, he was just also very off, because he even, from what I read too, he even exposed himself to one of his friend's sisters.
What?
Yeah, so he's got a perverted track record there. Yeah, he also had a compulsion to just be close and sexual with women, but he just was never able to have like any relationships with women. So there's like something there.
There's something there.
So after that, he worked at the Cedar Lodge, and that's where he decided to act on his urges. Carrie even said in the interview that Joey, he was saying that he was like throwing rocks in a creek, and he got a gun, tape, knife in his backpack, and he was like gonna go talk to Joey because he saw that she was alone, and he told her to go inside, and that's when he pulled the gun out on her. That's what I was telling you earlier.
What
that
the
he
hell?
Yeah, he takes her away from the cabin, he murders her, and then he leaves behind the evidence, the car tires, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Right now they did find the knife, and I think the knife was found by somebody else, like in another area, because I think he tried to hide it or whatnot. But aside from all that, clearly he's got a disturbed situation. Then there was the family situation, right? His younger mm-hmm. brother, Steven, was kidnapped in 1972. Him and the Stainer family were devastated, of course.
Yeah.
So like I said, in the last episode, I can't imagine that doesn't make it right. That doesn't make it okay. Nothing that Steven did would have created Carrie was. Like, Carrie's actions are Carrie's actions.
Yeah.
Steven's story is Steven's story, and Carrie's story is Carrie's story. But I can imagine also that how much sadness and emotional trauma there was going on in that household while all the other kids are also developing and growing.
Yeah.
I don't think it added. There's plenty of people who go through so much heartbreak that go through the craziest, saddest stories in the world, and they choose to be good people.
Yeah.
So, like, he clearly was wired.
Again, you said it very well. He had choice points.
Yeah, he had choice points, and he decided to choose every point that he wanted, not because, like, he wanted to go towards his urges.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, too, because, like, during the trial, the defense had brought up a witness and said that Carrie would constantly pray for Steven. So, like, while Steven was missing, he was praying for Steven. He would cry when he talked about it. And after the disappearance, mom and dad were so focused on finding Steven that Carrie and his sisters were neglected in a sense. But I'm also like, yeah, but that doesn't, I get it's the defense still, is doing yeah. what they're doing, but I'm like, that shit, that don't matter to me. Like
no.
I said, there's so many people yeah. that have also experienced
trauma or family stuff yes. like this, even worse.
Yeah, and, but they're not like, I'm yeah. going to go murder. Like, no, clearly Carrie was wired differently. He's a very disturbed individual. Because honestly, like, the fact that there's, what is it, like, they felt neglected. Yeah, that's like very human. I get that, right? That's a human level. Because
yeah.
I can't even believe how much that was for mom and dad, and then also the siblings and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And then let alone now having this trauma on top of this. You know what I mean? Steven went missing. He came back. He had a terrible
yeah.
story. He died young. Then 10 years later after his death, older brother is a murderer?
Yeah.
A serial killer? I can't, like, the family, yeah, the family, there's just a lot of family trouble.
That's a lot, man.
Yeah. And it said, they even said too, though, when Steven came home in 1980, Carrie was so happy. But now that the family had to pretty much adjust again, and this time with that insane amount of, like, press and media attention, that it was difficult for him. But regardless, after all that happened, when Steven ended up dying, when he passed away in 1989, that was like another blow to Carrie. And he had like a nervous meltdown. He even was telling a coworker, I think it was a coworker or a friend, that he wanted to drive his truck into his job's shop and kill everyone in there and kill the boss. And his friend or coworker or whatever pretty much told him, like, you need to get some help. Like, you need to see somebody. Like, you're not doing okay. Clearly you're having a breakdown. Like, it's the fact that you're having these violent fantasies, these dreams, like, it's not healthy.
Yeah.
He was also dreaming about killing women. He actually ended up going into a mental health facility that I saw, but didn't end up staying. And Carrie had even said that he felt like he was losing control. So
damn.
Yeah. But like I said, even after all that, that still doesn't mean that Steven
still had a choice point. Yeah.
You still had a choice point. What happened to, like, Steven did not cause what Carrie did, because the defense you know, talked about Steven for sure. Yes. Yeah, so, you know, they brought up this broader family dysfunction. And they also, like, were mentioning, like, alleged sexual abuse within the family, mental illnesses that extended to the family, all that. But still, like, at the end, either way, Steven had nothing to do with Carrie's actions. Steven was a victim and survivor.
Yes.
Carrie's crimes are Carrie's and his alone. Steven's trauma belongs to Steven, and Carrie's choices belong to Carrie. Yes. And that's why I said at the beginning of this episode that you don't really have to listen to part one to listen to part two. But if you do want to get the whole picture, I would listen to both.
Wow.
Yeah. And another thing, too, that I just randomly saw before, because I found another article. It was an ABC News article where they actually interview. So apparently Carey had a girlfriend at the time of his arrest. Okay.
Okay.
And the girlfriend had two daughters. And it was insane. I was reading this. They actually interview one of the daughters. Her name was Lena. And she was around 10 or 11 around the time that they knew Carey.
Yeah.
And she said that he always seemed safe, but like there was not like there. She was always very happy to see him. He seemed very involved. Nothing really out of the ordinary. But the crazy part is that when they found out that he was arrested for the murders, they also learned that he had actually tried killing her, Lena, and
what?
Her sister three separate times prior. Yeah. But they didn't know that because they were kids. They didn't know that until, what is it, after he was arrested.
Holy shit.
Did they find that? Yeah. So he's a disturbed, disgusting human being.
Yes.
Yes.
But.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Well, I found out how this is all connected and.
I know. That's exactly where. Yeah. It's like the
I'm
bigger
just
picture.
Say it right now, what all the listeners are thinking. I was not ready for part two to be what part two ended up being.
I know, I know. You didn't. You had
started
no idea.
Off, and I'm like, okay. Oh, damn. It's okay. It's just unfortunately connected because it's Yosemite. It's somewhat
right,
close
right.
to Steven
and
all and
Merced,
that. Like, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah,
okay.
Because Merced is the yeah. gateway to Yosemite, is what they
and
say.
And then
yeah.
even when you said at the beginning, you don't need to listen to part one to get part two. Now I'm like, no, listen to part one, then listen to part two.
I would definitely recommend it. Yeah.
Like, what? What?
Yeah, and that's why I did it like a two-parter, because I also feel like Steven's story should be its own thing, because Steven had endured and experienced something so horrific and terrible that it's sad to see that, because like every
it's
time I was
very, very sad.
Yeah, when I was researching Steven's case, like it was overshadowed a lot too by Carrie's actions 10
that's
years
going
later.
On now.
Yeah, with Carrie and all that, because they pretty much pinned it as like, what is it, hero. Brother, younger brother, serial killer, older brother.
Yeah.
So it's like a thing.
Damn.
There. Yeah, I know. So it's kind of like it. It's just that's why I'm like, you know what? Steven
gosh.
Deserves his own.
Yeah.
He definitely deserves his own.
He shouldn't
episode.
Be tied
yeah.
to
what
the
his
actions
what
of
his
older brother
of his older brother exactly. And that's why I was like, you don't really need to listen to part one, because episode one at part one is still like its own thing. But if you just want the whole picture, then you can listen to both. But
oh, wild.
Carol, Julie, Sylvina, and Joey went to Yosemite for adventure and exploration, and because of Carey Stainer, none of them came home. We hope that their families have been able to find some kind of peace in the years since they have left this earth, and let's just do our best to remember Carol, Julie, Sylvina, and Joey for the people who they were, you know? Because
yeah.
That's another thing, too. Like, I feel like every time we cover a Sinister episode and it involves, you know, like a murder case or something, I always try to find like news clippings, or I try to find the gravesite on Find My Grave to see if I can find more stuff about
yeah.
the ones that were like fucking murdered, because nobody talks about them most of the time. Most of them, they talk about
true.
The killer. And so that's why I'm like, I always try to learn a lot about what I can, because, you know, sometimes some of them don't really have much information about them
yeah.
out there. So I try to learn what I can. And I'm like, now when I look at like Joey's photo, I think about, oh my God, she had such a bright life.
Adventurous.
Yeah.
yeah.
And when I see the photos of Carol with her daughter, Julie, and their friend, Sylvina, it's like so cute. It's like a mom and daughter with like a friend, you know, like a girl's trip.
Yeah,
let's
just
go to Yosemite.
Out, like having a fun time.
Yeah.
We're going to go to look at a college,
right.
but let's just take a little like
detour and have like a fun trip and just do something together. And I even think about, because when I saw the photo of them, there's actually a photo of, what is it, Carol and Sylvina. I'll post it on socials, that it seems like Julie took a photo of them when they were at Cedar Lodge, like in their room. And they're just like sitting on the bed. And I don't know, you could just feel the energy of, they're like, oh, so excited. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it reminded me so much of me growing up and like hanging out with, what is it, certain kids from my block. And we would go do things with like their mom
yeah.
or, you know, vice versa. And to me, I'm just like, oh my God, those were like such fun memories that I'm like, this sucks that this stupid loser Carey had to go and fucking ruin it for everybody just because he's so disturbing, couldn't get any help. But anyways, we just hope that their families are able to find some kind of peace. And that is today's Sinister episode, friends. Oh, that was a heavy one.
Mm-hmm.
That was very heavy. Yes. Yes. I know.
I'm ready to go watch something happy.
Light. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. Maybe the next episode will be a spooky
Spooky.
You want a spooky episode? Okay.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because we did this one, the one prior. We did You want a strange episode?
Yeah, let's do it.
Maybe.
Who knows? See. What's the audience going to get?
Ooh. Ooh. Ah.
What the audience gets is the same thing I get. So we're all guessing, you know?
Yeah, everybody's guessing. Well, I'll see how I feel. Thank you for joining us today on Macabre Mondays. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts and also on YouTube, okay? Because you can actually hang out with us while I tell you the story and you are listening to it for the first time with Tom.
Okay.
And if you know more about today's episode or caught a detail we might have missed, we're not robots.
Like a detail about Yosemite?
Yosemite. Oh my God. I need to work on that. But anyways, let us know, okay? We'd love to learn.
And if you have a story that's strange, sinister, downright spooky, it does not matter how small you may think it is, please send it our way. You can email us at macabremondayspodcast@gmail.com or head over to macabremondays.com and submit your story. Yours just might be featured in an upcoming listener episode.
Follow us on social media by searching Macabre Mondays for photos of today's episode, updates, and a little extra spooky fun. We'll see you next Monday for another sinister, strange, and spooky episode. Stay tuned, more mysteries just around the corner, but until then, stay curious and stay safe, friends.
Deuces.
Bye.